TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 110, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
I'm Tom from Glendale.
And Susie from Sherman Oaks.
I'm Josh from Lake Balboa.
Lake Balboa, I think that is the first. You guys, if nothing else, they're learning all the different neighborhoods in L.A.
Subdivisions.
Every subdivision.
Yeah. This is how we're going to start all the podcasts from now on, geography quiz on L.A.
All right, and this week in the news, the big news is that Fringe has been renewed.
Woo!
For 13 episodes.
I'll take it.
Yes, considering what the ratings are, I'll take it too.
I'm glad they're doing a shorter season so they can focus.
That's true too, but it's also, I feel like we're not getting any standalones. Give me 13 episodes, no standalones. Everything is going to be on point. I think.
Exactly.
Well, we get to Fringe, I'll tell you what I think they're going to do.
Okay.
But, that's all I have in the news. Anybody else got news?
Nope.
All right.
I don't know if you heard about what they did with Fringe before when they didn't know that it was getting renewed, but they actually shot two different endings for the season finale.
I heard about that.
The season finale and the series finale.
Right.
So maybe we'll get the alternate on the DVD.
Ah, I see what you mean. But I don't see why they would do that, especially if they have 13 more episodes. I wouldn't think they would do it.
Well, no, they did it before.
Just so we can see what might have been.
No. I know, but why would you put it on there? But that would foreshadow, like, maybe they put it on the end of the last season.
Well,
the 24th season one, they put the alternate ending where she doesn't die, where Terry doesn't die, and it was boring. Oh, Jack, what took you so long? Traffic was a
All right, let's get started. First up, let's talk about Game of Thrones.
Please, somebody kill this kid. I am
evil. Oh my god. Cannot die fast enough for me.
Seriously.
I have to say, this is a big divergence from the book.
It's a very
big divergence.
Which aspect?
That whole scene. Like, that's
he didn't do that in the book?
No.
Are you talking about the scene with Joffrey and the crossbow?
Yeah, and the prostitutes, right.
The prostitutes, correct. But the crossbow with Sansa...
The crossbow scene, that is correct. Okay. When he rips up Sansa's dress, that's in the book.
Yeah.
So that actually does lead to a very similar conversation where they're actually like, obviously, even though he's young, he obviously has feelings about women or else he wouldn't rip their clothes off, right? It's like he doesn't rip off the guy's clothes. So Tyrion is correct that there's something going on there. However, I think he chose the wrong method.
Because
the scene with the prostitutes is not in the book.
That was just wrong.
That was very wrong.
It wasn't in the book, but I still felt it was in Joffrey's character.
I don't know. They pushed him from being childish antics to being sadistic adult crimes. So it pushed him from... Because in my head, I was kind of like, everything he's done so far is kind of a spoiled child.
Right.
What he did...
With power.
With power. And it's just like a spoiled child's point of view. What he did with the prostitutes is a whole different other thing.
Yeah, that's straight up evil.
You're right. And so that pushed him into a whole new category. And I find that interesting that the writers
did that.
I like
that he's in that category. I think, like, we really need a strong villain-type character. And just having a petulant, spoiled child doesn't work. But if you have a woman-hating jerk, like Joffrey is now, it makes you hate him that much more.
That's true, because, you know, he's going to get his comeuppance one of these days, whenever that is. But it does make
later.
It, I think, a little easier for people to say, you know, oh, instead of him just being a kid who really needed to be scolded and, you know, taken out of that element, no, he really is kind of black
evil
at the core.
Yeah.
And it's too late. Yeah. So when the comeuppance comes, there you don't have any guilt of it. You're like, I know he's a kid, but God damn, he needed that.
Right, exactly. And just as an aside to that, I feel like there should be something in the show now where it's required every episode somebody just slaps him. I just want to see more slapping Joffrey scenes.
Well, I think the only person who gets away with it for some reason is Tyrion.
Yeah.
It's like, because Tyrion doesn't fear him. And no, everybody else does.
He's his mother's brother, you know, his true uncle, you know, in the close-knit family. So I think he has a little bit of leverage there as well. But you're right, outside of that, really nobody could do it. So
Why haven't we seen Jaime, speaking of Lannisters?
Because he's in prison. That's kind of boring.
Yeah.
But still.
And Jaime isn't even really much in the second book either, up until, like, the end.
Yeah.
Right.
He didn't have much to do. She's a prisoner.
Yeah, they warned us, though, that in this series they were going to divert from the book a bit, not that they haven't already, because they realized that having Jaime such one of the you know, people love to hate Jaime, I guess, but they figure having him in the cell the entire time for the series wasn't going to be good enough, so they actually, the writers or the producers actually said they were going to bring him out sooner, I think.
Right, but the other thing, this episode felt like a really big divergence from the book, because there were a lot of things that happened that aren't in the book.
Yeah.
It was so weird. Like, this episode, I was like, whoa, what is this? Whoa, what is that? You know, so...
You're right, though, because even the little bit that we got of Daenerys, that never happened in the book.
Yeah, I know.
It was fun, though.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it wasn't.
I liked it.
It was cool to see.
It was a good episode, but it was actually... This is the first episode that's actually surprised me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Don't you want surprises, though?
I want them to stay true to the book still. Like, the first season had a little divergences, but it was pretty much true to the book.
Right. I'm with you, Libya. That's how I feel about it, too. I don't mind them being a little creative on the edges, but just like you would try and translate Shakespeare to modern times, you don't really mess with the story or the script too much. You know, you keep it real. And I think they are starting to divert a lot more. So it could be like this for the next couple episodes.
Well,
of this series.
Don't forget, Martin is a, you know, senior writing producer.
I know. So yeah. he approves.
It's sanctioned.
Yeah,
sure.
It's sanctioned, but yeah. It still feels weird because I was like, wait, what's going on? Like with Arya... Arya being taken as Tywin's cup girl or whatever.
Right.
I like the fact that he looked at her 5 seconds as a girl, like instantly. Like,
yeah.
I really
like that scene with Tywin, and like, I'm kind of like, I know you're not supposed to like this guy, but I kind of do.
Well, I really respect him, and I think that's the thing is he's smarter. And he was like, "Why are you just killing people?" He's like, "Do we have enough people that you just go killing everyone, all our prisoners, because we don't need them?" They were just torturing people to death for no reason.
Death
by rat, that was just nasty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, you're doing it for no reason. He's like, okay, the guy you're about to kill, what do? He's like, I'm a smith. He's like, are you kidding me? You're going to kill a smith? Like, at war times, smiths are super valuable. So, yeah, he immediately realized, like, these guys are idiots. He should have actually killed them because they're dumb.
And then don't forget, we added the part here, or we kind of, and you probably remember, Olivia, too, with the book, they kind of did a condensation in a way of the part with the lady in red. And
That was crazy, right?
What is up with the lady in red?
This is the first book where they tell you magic is real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Magic is real, and she is the harbinger of that. Like, as soon as the dragons came back, it was like, cap is off.
Oh, not only the dragons, but whatever the White Walkers are. I mean, obviously there's stuff going on.
Yeah,
there's
all the magic is totally coming back. And the lady...
Oh, had the magic gone away?
I think so, pretty much. Like, that's why nobody thinks it's real. Like, people hadn't seen dragons in forever. People don't think the White Walkers exist. Magic had been gone for so long that people kind of assumed it was gone, and now magic is totally just back.
Because that's Master Lewin, I think, was telling that to Bran, like, last episode or the one before. He was like, you know, those are great stories, and it might have been that way one day, but it doesn't exist anymore. There's been no, quote, proof of magic, if you will, for, you know, centuries or whatever.
Now,
like he was saying, like, when I was doing my training, I tried magic just to see, and it didn't work.
Right.
Now, was this the episode where Bran is still having these dreams about being with...
No, they didn't show Bran this week.
Have Bran this week.
They kind of merged together because there's so many plot lines. I
discuss this with my mom every week, and we're just calling Game of Thrones the shortest hour on TV because every episode feels like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I know, right?
You just started. You can't stop.
Yeah, I did feel like that when the lady in red had that weird... gooey
for shadow baby
for she,
yeah,
the,
what was that?
Yeah,
well, I know what it is, but I can't tell you.
I know what it is too. And I'll be honest, I was surprised how much of it they showed,
right? I thought they
were gonna do like some very clever editing so you didn't see it but got the idea.
Yeah, they actually really showed it, and it's pretty much how I imagined it too.
Me
so
too, right?
That's pretty impressive. Like, When you read the book, that's exactly what it looks like.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I was discussing this with a number of people, and they were telling me that was not how I pictured it when I read the book, and I'm like, really? Because that was exactly how I pictured it.
I know. Well, the weird thing about that, and that's why I say the timing on it was just kind of weird, they did that shift in time thing again, because when that scene happened in the show, I thought about it, and I mean, I'm fresh off the book, really, so I remember the timing on stuff, and it happened after, without giving anything away, another fairly big plot point.
Yeah.
You know, that happened.
That's what I thought, and I wasn't sure if I was remembering it wrong.
You did,
or not.
That's exactly right. They've reversed. I think the big plot point that we're going to see coming up very shortly is going to be valid, but I think they had to do this in order to set that one up. I think in the book we had the luxury of being able to kind of piece the things together.
Oh, I know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this
totally
up.
I'm totally clueless. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, we're being coded at this point, but let's wrap this up. So Game of Thrones, thumbs up.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody pimp slap Jeffrey.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Mad Men.
I thought, boy. The thing that's really interesting about being on Team Megan versus Team Betty, who, when she's not in an episode, I do not miss her at all. Mm-hmm. She and Don, because she's a little bit more equal, their relationship's really volatile, and she doesn't put up with his crap. And
that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Say what?
That's a good thing, right?
I like that about her, but at the same time, I sort of feel like she might be a little unstable.
Well, yeah. The thing is, she's a little unstable, but no more than he is.
True. Okay, that's true.
And I agree, but what bothered me is at the end, honestly, because when he left her, and, you know, and obviously years ago, so it's probably safer to be left outside of, you know, a Howard Johnson's or whatever back then. But, you know, the fact that he came back and found her sunglasses and didn't know where she was. And, you know, a gentleman did not leave his wife like that, you know, or any girl, really.
Bingo.
And so I thought, at the end.
We've established for a long time that Don is not a gentleman.
He's not. No, well, we know that. But for him to come back and then find her at home, and I was like, you go, girl. She was like, you know, stay away from me. She's running away from him. And in the end, when he's like hugging her and he's like, I'm sorry. And she's like, I'm like, don't give into it. Why are you giving into it? You know,
they're so codependent, which it's odd to see him respond to her like that. But I still fear for their relationship and B, her safety.
I agree, because don't forget the fever dream that he had when he was sick a couple episodes ago.
Oh, right.
Like, it is dreamy, murdered someone. So we do know he's a little unstable himself when it gets that way. But I was sad because then pretty much the last scene, it cuts to them and, you know, when they're back at work and they're just walking in very happy and they give each other little smiles. And I'm like, no, you guys just had this huge fight and this whole stupid thing and she should still be mad at him. And it just, it made me so mad. Talk about Mad Men.
I think they both need some serious therapy.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I'm loving Roger this season.
You know, he's pretty awesome.
He's pretty freaking hilarious, and just the whole subplot this week with him and his wife and them tripping out on LSD and basically deciding to get a divorce.
But he did it with such cool finesse. I love it.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. That scene was just so fantastic.
Yep.
He's just coming to a point where it's like, you know, I don't give a rip. I'm just going to have fun.
Yeah. I think he just accepts it. Yeah. You know?
And it seems like every week he usually has the best lines of the episode. Like, when the two guys were about to fight, I think it was last week in the office, and Roger was like, I know cooler heads should prevail, but am I the only one who wants to see this?
Right. But he is. He's kind of standing back and just kind of either bemused or, you know, lackadaisical about the whole thing because he's not really sure where it's going.
Well, I think like Tom said, he just doesn't care anymore. Well,
he's somebody
who's sort of realizing that his time has come and gone.
We need to wrap this one up, so you guys thinking thumbs up?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. So we want to talk about the premiere of Veep, which premiered on HBO over the weekend, and I watched it. Who here watched it?
I did.
All right. So Tom is very excited. Go for it.
I like it. It's just, it's hard to describe. She's a female vice president, and very foul-mouthed and has a hapless team of assistants. Including...
She has a very bad staff. How is her staff that
really bad?
Well, no, she's got the great line, the level of incompetence in this office.
She's not kidding. Her people suck.
Yeah. But you know, Anna Close... I like that because the vice president really is like the most thankless job in all of Washington.
Yes.
There is nothing for you to do, and yet everybody's watching you waiting for you to screw up.
There is that, too. I agree that idea, and I like the guy who basically maneuvered himself onto the team or whatever. I was like, oh, that's pretty smart. He's the smartest one there.
Damn.
Yeah, he was the smartest one there, but I didn't laugh. Like, the whole half hour, I was just like, I was bored.
I was dying laughing.
I was chuckling, but I just liked the awkwardness of it. And, like, the way I'm kind of describing it is it's like Curb Your Enthusiasm in the West Wing.
Yes.
Well, I didn't like Curb Your Enthusiasm, so that doesn't...
Oh, you didn't like Curb?
Oh, maybe, okay.
So I didn't find it funny. I was just like, nah. So I'm not a comedy person. Everybody knows that. The comedy has to really be good for me to be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Veep is not that.
It marches to the beat of a different drummer, but I laughed a lot.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, and like even though Julia Louis-Dreyfus has said that they're not modeling her character off of anybody, I'm watching this, and all I could think was, this must be Joe Biden's every day.
That would be fantastic. Okay, that was funny.
And I like some of the cynical aspects of, you know, politics and why, you know, they have the cornstarch utensils.
That was silly.
That was so ridiculous.
Yeah, you put it in
that sounds like something that somebody would do.
Right, and you put it in a hot beverage and it just bends. It's like, so,
yeah.
No, all right. Two out of three people here liked it? Is that about right?
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
So I give it a thumbs down. Everybody else gives it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I give it a thumbs up. I'm going to keep watching.
Me too.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Eureka.
You're breaking my heart.
Oh, Eureka, don't do this to me. Don't break my heart this early in the season.
Seriously.
You can tell this is the last season, man. They're pulling out all the stops.
Yeah, they just don't care anymore. They're not pulling any punches. Well, like, no, I was, I was in freaking tears at the end of this episode. I was like, you cannot do that.
But
on Twitter did it very well, and all they did was they copied Jamie or tweeted him, and they're just like, no! And used up all of their characters with the big no.
You've got to remember, they did not realize this was going to be the last season when they shot these.
Not all of them. They did at the end.
Not at the very end.
Yeah, they knew at the end, but you're right, at the beginning they didn't know.
At the beginning they did not know, so the misdirect that Felicia's joining the cast was always their intention, and then they're like,
and I feel so bad for Fargo. Really? He cannot catch a break, man.
I know, right? It's like he finally like gets his perfect girl and then they kill her.
I'm wondering how long they're gonna let how long this specific arc is gonna continue until they catch Beverly and...
Well, I saw the preview for next week.
Is it next week or...
Yeah, the preview for next week, Beverly actually feels bad about killing her. And tells the sheriff. So
she's an evil biznatch.
Yeah, but she doesn't apparently
want to
kill people.
Now we have a new villain with Senator Wen.
Yeah, Senator Wen is more evil than her.
If you didn't see that coming.
Oh, of course.
Oh, I saw it coming from the get-go, but I'm like, okay, at least now it's established.
Yeah. Right.
I know, but it really, that one was kind of an obvious one.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And especially if you watch Stargate Universe, she was evil in that universe too, so.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, well, Eureka has never been big about being subtle with their twists, so I don't really care.
No, true. We just want to see how she's going to get hers when the time comes.
Yeah, yes. And I like the idea that in the preview for next week, they show Carter's about to get put into that alternate, into their faux reality. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, by the way, like, he's already strapped in, and he's about to go in. And she goes, oh, by the way, you broke up with Allison and you're dating Joe. And he's like, what? And then they send him in. That's great. Because he's like, wait, what's going on? So he's got to pretend to fit into that universe or he's going to get found out by the AI or the NCPs.
Everybody else. Yeah.
The
NCPs.
non-player characters, NPCs, non-player characters.
I New Caprica Police.
No.
Wrong show.
Anyway, all right, so Eureka was fantastic. Thumbs up.
Except for your breaking my
up,
heart.
I mean, damn you all.
Yeah, I mean, it sucked, and I was very upset about Felicia Day dying, but I have to say, it takes balls to kill her now.
I mean, how can you
yeah. I mean, the level, it definitely ups the ante for the rest of the series. I mean, where are they going to go, you know?
Yeah, and I was actually afraid that we were going to see her die twice this week, but we'll get to that later.
Yes.
How convenient that she jumps from one show.
I don't know if my heart could have taken that.
I don't know if she quite did that on purpose, but it was still awesome. All right, next up, let's talk about the 30 Rock Live episode and the fact that they did a different feed on the East Coast versus the West Coast. I think the biggest difference was the guest star who has to use Jack's bathroom. On the East Coast was
Paul McCartney.
Thank you. Thank you. I was like, I could see his face and I couldn't think his name.
And on the West Coast, it was Kim Kardashian.
Right. It was like you go with the old and then you go with the new. So, and they also said some of the jokes were different.
There were a few different punchlines, and also the newscaster segment.
Right. John Hamm was on the East
Coast. John Hamm was on the East Coast, and Brian Williams was on the West Coast.
I like the Brian Williams one.
He's kind of
me too.
John Hamm
was great. Biscuit though.
John Hamm and Black.
I love John Hamm. He was that Amos and Andy.
Well, I was just about
my
to.
God.
Hysterical.
I was just about to say that John Hamm and blackface. I'm not sure about that.
What?
Yes.
It was so ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. He had on a faux afro, and he had
basically doing like
he had makeup on.
Morgan impression.
But I think they call themselves making it more sarcastic because they didn't give him full blackface. They gave him little patches of black, so it actually just looked like he was dirty.
Yeah.
And but then he just did the whole Amos and Andy speak. And but he did the skit with Tracy Morgan. So then Tracy Morgan at one point was like, I do not believe I like the way in which you are speaking to me. Henceforth, you shall speak in a classier fashion. And then John
Hamm.
This
Hamm is not how gentlemen speak to each other.
Right. And John Hamm kept doing the whatever kind of talk that was. I can't even imitate it. And then, of course,
I can't even try to imitate it because, like, somewhere somebody will know I'm a racist and I don't want to. It's like, just like by even trying to do it, it makes you a racist.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm not. Anyway, I understood what they were going for. I'm not decided yet on whether I'm wholly offended about it or not, but I was just like, yeah, okay, I get what you're going for.
I honestly thought it was hilarious, and I want to see John Hamm do more comedy.
He is funny.
He was a he's done comedy before. That's
I know.
Funny,
like it seems like, and I like this, but it seems like everything he does that isn't Mad Men is comedy.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I think he needs a break. But yeah. And then the other thing they did.
But he had a year and a half break.
They did a skit where they were doing a telethon, and it was supposed to be a young Jack Donaghy. And who's that actor? He's an actor.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, it was. That was
doing
actually
a really bad Alec Baldwin impression.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
But that's what made it so good.
You're right.
Are any of Jimmy Fallon's impressions that good?
No. So Neil
Young isn't bad.
Well, anyway, I thought that the episode as a whole was interesting. I like that they gave them opportunity to do all these weird skits. Some of the skits were funnier than other skits. But overall, I thought it was entertaining.
Was it just an episode of TGS?
No, it was just... They were talking about live television and how the history of live television has brought us to where we are today. So they did all these flashbacks to other live shows all the way back.
That's the other one. Alec Baldwin as that drunk TV variety show host.
Well, he was
that
basically...
That was hilarious.
He was Martin. Yeah. He was supposed to be Dean Martin.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like, that was all this... Some of the skits were funnier than others, but... Yeah, I think it was still, overall, I think it was still a good episode.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed this more than their last live episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so
it's more memorable.
I'll watch it then.
Yeah.
Watch the West Coast feed. Okay. I think the West Coast one was better.
Even with Kardashian?
I like the...
there's an impromptu kiss on the East Coast.
I did like the punchline with Paul McCartney better than the punchline with Kim Kardashian.
That's true. The punchline with because then you got the Alec Baldwin kiss on that one.
Yeah,
which obviously was not entirely planned. All right.
not at all.
Next up, let's talk about Community. And this was their Law and Order.
This was so great. This was so amazing. I loved it so much.
There was nothing wrong with it from beginning to end.
No, it was the most perfect Law and Order parody I've ever seen.
Everything was so right.
How do you describe it? I mean, I was just waiting for it to kind of fall apart at the edges a little, but it never did. Like, they kept every single thing true to it, even though they knew that they were in Community, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, it was brilliant.
Well,
brilliant.
What's hilarious is they even wore the winter jackets that everybody on Law & Order wears because they're outside in New York. So indoors at their community college, they're wearing the heavy coats that all the detectives always
wear.
Well,
when they went outside and they did the part where they, because in every Law & Order episode ever, there's somebody outside at like a cart, like getting a hot dog or something.
Yeah,
there's construction going on. And I'm dying. I'm like, really? Where in Greendale at the community college is this happening? But I don't even care.
No, and then what was great is when they went to the corner, and it's actually a corner from Law & Order. And then she tells, because the whole thing is the yam has been murdered. Right? So she actually does an autopsy on a yam. It's like, not only was this yam dropped, it was also stepped on. So obviously the intent was malice. It was so...
I just love like how they would do like the little twist. It's like, whoever grew this yam, they should have gotten an A+. It was sprouting.
Exactly, because they kept it true to the plot.
That was so
and
great.
Even to the phone call at the very end. It was like perfect.
It was.
Well, and then they had the lab tech. Because Britta was the lab tech, and she's like, by tracing this phone call and going in... No, she's like, by going into this picture, I can make it look old-timey. And they're like, yeah, that's not what we want. And she's
which
like,
I can make it less color.
Because even that makes, you know, pokes fun at the whole idea of every procedural show out there where, you know, they have, right, the lab tech or, like, the techie guy who can magically find, you know, CC camera information somewhere and expand it, or, you know,
zoom in on that. Right.
Yeah. And so having her be a total dork at it was perfect.
Everything about it was great. And then they had the twist when they had their actual law procedure. They were like, I like the guys like, you do realize this is not actually a real court. Yeah. It was very good.
Yeah. I just love like when they would like, when they had like their back and forth objections, like I object to your objection. Overruled, sustain. I object.
No.
I object to your overruling. This is not a real court, so I object to that.
Oh, and then the judge actually objected to something. It was hilarious.
And she sustained it.
We can't even talk about this without laughing. So obviously it's a good episode, so go watch it if you haven't.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, this is one of the best ones they've done.
Yep.
All right, so thumbs up, Community. Next up is Big Bang. And this was the big one where...
Bachelor party.
Yeah, where they basically embarrass Wolowitz with all their crazy stories. And then Sheldon is mad that evil Wil Wheaton is actually friends with people other than him. Like, Wil Wheaton's only friend can be Sheldon.
I thought they didn't use Wil Wheaton enough.
Not in that episode.
That they probably didn't pay him, you know, quite a bit.
No.
But you know, he did still have the best line of the episode, which is, "Oh, internet, this is going all over you."
Which of course played into, which was funny because at first you thought it was like a throwaway gag, but then it's not, because later on we find out that's how she saw what happened. So that worked out really well.
And the fact that she got mad about all that stuff, I thought it was sort of silly.
Well, it is kind of weird because, I mean, if you think about it,
well, I don't think she was mad about it. She was mad that Howard didn't tell her about it.
Well, but what's her name? Penny had a really good point, though, when she was telling her. She's like, you know, hooked me up with him. Didn't you know about all this stuff? And she's like, well, yeah, but I didn't think it'd get beyond the first date. And then you guys, like, basically, like, had a second date, and then you met his mother and all that. And she goes, you know, so basically it's on you. That far, then it's up at that point, either, you know, things have been divulged or they haven't, you know. I mean, come on, you're either in it or you're not, so...
Right, and
I do like the fact that, you know, I don't know how much time we'll spend on this one because it's a shorty, but I think they really did play out the ending very nicely on that with his.
Right. They did, and I did like that Howard was able to give her like the most perfect boyfriend apology speech in the history of ever.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. Yep. But my whole thing is Wolowitz is different from her with her, and I guess my thing is unless he's an axe murderer in his past.
It shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't matter.
Yeah,
right.
I agree. Yeah.
And, I mean, and it wasn't like he did all those things while he was with her. These were like years before.
I'm just wondering. It seems like we're leading to the finale being the wedding.
Right.
But I'm wondering if they can find a way to not screw up the show.
By them getting married?
By them getting married.
I think it's fine if they're married.
I think it'll be fine,
too.
Almost
I think it'll be fine, though. Too, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with them being married. Like, this is not one of those shows that is dependent on the tension between Wallowitz and Bernadette. So,
right.
I think it's fine.
And really, they've done a good job of, like, integrating the dynamic of the two of them over the last season or so.
Right. Yep. So I think they'll be fine.
I wish they'd add Amy Fair and Bernadette to the opening credit when they're sitting around.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's been a couple of seasons now. They're part of the DNA of the show.
Oh, okay. I can see what you mean.
I agree.
All right. Wrapping that up, two thumbs up, Big Bang, good episode.
Yep. Yeah.
TVD!
Next up is Vampire Diaries.
Can I just say that it's like they read Libya's mind from our last podcast? She was all down on a lyric, and it's like, okay, we'll show you a lyric like you haven't seen it.
I have to agree that when, because I thought they were going to kill him. Like, the whole thing was leading up to his. I know. But at first, when the mom was all like, we'll make you another original, I was like, that sounds like a really bad idea. But it could kind of be awesome. But it's a bad idea. But it's kind of awesome. And so I like that Elena was like, she's like, yeah, you couldn't control the other originals you made, and you're trying to kill them all. Why the heck would you make another original? You know? And I was like, Elena has a very good point. And then they made the awesome steak. Like, they gave it they made a super-powered steak. And they gave it to him. They gave him a super weapon and made him a superhero. I'm like, all right, you guys win. You know, I can't fight you making him super awesome. The only thing is, we haven't quite seen him yet as being super evil with his superpowers yet. So that they could still screw that up. But the good big goodbye that they did for him, I kind of feel that's probably the last time we see good Alaric.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody said goodbye to him. They had this whole big thing. And he had his last moments with his boy, his bromance.
Damon.
It was like the girlfriend left. Did you see that? That's hilarious. So his girlfriend is like, oh, I'm going to leave him for his last moments to be with you. And I was like, really? Okay.
True bromance.
Yes. So him and Damon got to share their last moments together. That was very sad. And I actually did tear up a little bit.
I kept reading on the line that people were crying. It's like, seriously?
I did.
Seriously?
I did. It was sad.
You didn't even like the character.
I know, but Damon was sad and Elena was sad. So therefore geez. I was sad. And I understand why they're throwing Elena and Stefan back together, because they've spent so much time all season with Elena and Damon. So I guess they feel that they need to give Stefan kind of equal service time to make a true triangle. But I don't care about them at all. I really don't.
Right. Well, it's because Stefan's so boring unless he's completely evil.
I know. I don't care that she's... The only thing is, I like that Damon tried to pretend that he's not jealous, but he totally is. So that will be interesting. The triangle aspect of it is the only thing that's interesting about that, because if it was just Stefan and Elena, I'd be like, shoot me now. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I fall asleep? Dollhouse Dog. Did I fall asleep?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just, boy, I love the idea just from the previews that they're going to have to turn to Klaus.
Oh, right.
So not only the brothers united, but they have to go to Klaus, and he's like, why should I help you?
Well, because it's to help him, because... You know, that dude, he's coming after the originals, yeah, so you better do something about him.
Mommy dearest.
But they've now made him evil so that it's all right to kill him, basically.
Yep.
Aw, Lark.
And again, it's last week, this time you're like, hate him.
Well, no, I hate him being evil. I like Lark. Like, the character Lark, I like him.
So you don't like evil Lark?
I don't like evil Lark.
You like good Lark.
Yes, and so him dying
had gotten kind of boring.
He had, and I understand why they felt like they needed to do this, because they weren't doing anything with his character. I get that, but man, that's not a. He needed to go out a hero, which he sort of did.
We'll see.
All right, so thumbs up, Vampire Diaries.
Yes.
All right, so next up is Person of Interest, and in this week's episode, basically they did the cool thing about the way the show works is you never know who's the bad guy, who's the good guy. Mm-hmm. He gets the number, and he has to guess. He has to watch the guy's life and figure out if he thinks he's going to be a good guy or a bad guy. And if this guy ended up being both. And that was kind of interesting, except that I saw the double cross of the girlfriend ahead of time. Like, I saw it coming. Which I don't know if he was blinded by. He wasn't really looking at her. He believed her. I was like, why would you believe her and not know she was lying to you? But, I mean, the episode itself was pretty good because you got to use Carter and you got to use is his name Lionel? Yeah.
Lionel.
You got to use Lionel and Carter to bet, you know, good effect. And they both did,
I love that. Should we tell them they're really on the same?
Nah. I think that's kind of stupid, though.
Not tell them?
Yeah, I think it's dumb, too. I mean, at the first, because he didn't know if he could really trust both of them, I understood it. But now I feel like they're both loyal.
But see, the problem is, if you tell them, you also endanger them both. Because they can slip.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
But they could also kill each other accidentally, because they think the other one is not working for them.
I think that they would stop them before that happens. For me, what really made this episode fascinating, though, is the backstory. Reese's backstory.
Right, yeah.
And finding out, because obviously, I guess the partner's going to come into play very soon.
Well, she kills off the CIA agents, which is pretty cool.
That was awesome.
And I like the fact that they thought that the bank account was his. They were like, oh, there was a wounded agent who needed medical assistance, used this bank account, and now it's active. But they thought it was Reese's, now realizing she also was hurt. And I was like, oh, right. And the whole thing when they gave him the order historically, they gave him that order. It was like, you need to kill her because she's a mole. I was like,
She's been turned.
I don't know if I would just, especially they've been partners for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the fact that he didn't just kill her. He asked a question. He wanted to ask her about it. But she just shot him without even asking.
Which is always interesting. I mean, playing people off against each other.
Right.
Now, I want to know, is this legitimate CIA? Or is this like one of those SD6 type things?
Oh, I see. You're thinking aliens.
Because it just seems that the stuff that they've been doing is really not on the level.
Like, you think the real CIA is?
Well, point well taken.
So I thought it was good. I mean, the flashbacks were all pretty good, and the current day story was interesting. And I liked that the armored car guys kept saying that he was a rookie, and he's like, they don't have their ammo loaded properly. Their vests are like, he was listing all the things they weren't doing properly, and they were like, oh, you're just the rookie. And I was like, man. You know, that was kind of interesting.
But that armored car thing was pretty cool.
Oh, when they blew it, when they took it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it was good because he thought he was looking externally for threats, and it was a total inside job. So, yeah, that was pretty good. So, overall, it's a good episode. It's not one of their better ones. Arc episodes on Person of Interest are usually the best.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was still, it was one of their better. It was a good episode. All right. Next up, I want to talk about Scandal for 5 seconds, mainly because they flipped the script a little bit and made this a more serious show or a more cheesy show. I'm not quite sure which. Because they basically, the whole thing with the woman who's been the intern that was sleeping with the president, and are they going to go to the news? What are they going to do? Are they going to get a payoff? Like, all that was going on. And Olivia was flipping out because she found out the girl was pregnant. And so she didn't know how to deal with it. And she was having all this emotional turmoil. And I think they made her a little too off the chain. Like, she started losing her head a little bit. And it was affecting her other work.
This is why I didn't get into it watching the first two episodes. Because I felt like she was too emotionally unstable to be this Washington power player that they're establishing her to be.
Well, I had no problem in the first couple because it is dealing with something personal, and that's fine. But this episode, I thought they went a little too far. But the main thing that I actually am like wondering if they know what they're doing is that you hear the girl, the intern, is on the phone saying, I'm not going to go through with this. I'm going to tell Olivia the truth. And I'm like, who the heck are you talking to? And then later on that night, some masked man comes in, ties her up, gives her an injection, which either kills her or knocks her out, you're not sure which, and basically takes her away. And, of course, now Olivia is going to think the president did it because he literally, like an hour before, threatened her. gave everybody their background story and said, we are at war. He's like, this is what war, he's like, I'm going to show you what war with the White House looks like. And so he just threatened her. And then a couple hours later, the intern disappears. So it's going to totally look like the president did it. And we're not supposed to know whether he did it or whoever she was talking on the phone did it. So we don't know. But she doesn't, of course, Olivia doesn't know about who's on the phone. And I'm like, wait, we're going into the murder category now? Like, it seems like this is not quite the kind of show that murders people. Mm-hmm. So they better have some good follow-up. So that's the only thing I'm worried. Like, I'm worried, a little worried right now. But hopefully it'll turn out good. All right.
Okay.
Next up, we'll talk about Awake really quickly. And this week, I actually forgot to watch it.
Basically, there was a football game in both universes with different outcomes and both tied to murders.
Right.
And so that's the big thing, how it informs. But the real story is that in the Rexaverse, his girlfriend breaks up with him and he's all distraught and, you know, comes to his dad.
I forgot he even had a girlfriend, but okay. Oh, that's right, he did. Okay, I remember.
But we find out that she was pregnant and lost the baby.
His breaking from his thing? Oh,
Rex's,
wow.
Rex's girlfriend was pregnant with his baby. So in the Hannahverse, Michael goes to Rex's girlfriend and asks her, are you pregnant? And she is.
So the baby, it wasn't Rex's baby.
No, it was Rex's. Remember, in the Rexiverse.
It was Rex's baby. So whose baby's in this universe?
It's Rex's. But the thing is, because there can be subtle differences like the football game.
Wait, how can, in Hannahverse, how could it still be Rex's baby?
Because she found out about the time of the accident. The girl found out.
Oh, about the baby. I thought she was a new girlfriend.
No, this is Rex's girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So,
So as they're packing up to go to Oregon.
Oh, now this is going to be the reason why they stay.
Michael stops the movers and says, I need to talk to you, to his wife. And so that's the cliffhanger. And of course, the tease, we have the captain, you know, the evil police captain who still thinks she's on the event in both universes. But if they don't go to Oregon, then they're gonna
have to kill
her. Her co-conspirator's like, you told me you'd take care of this. It's like, I just, you know.
The conspiracy thing is silly, but I like everything else about the show.
Yeah, well, Jason Isaacs makes the show.
Yes.
And I don't know. I have a feeling it won't be back.
Well, the ratings are really low.
The ratings are terrible, even for NBC, which is hard.
Yeah, so it's not going to make it. I mean,
I just hope they give us a semblance of closure. Nothing's worse than getting involved with the show and to be left hanging.
That's true. But, I mean, NBC just really frustrates me. I almost feel like I should never watch anything on NBC because it never makes it past season one.
I started minimizing what I watch.
Yeah,
on NBC.
So.
Anyway. Except for Grimm.
Grimm's the only one who's going to make it.
They threw it on Friday night thinking it would be buried there, and now it's become like this silent breakout hit.
Yeah. They actually said, that's another piece of news that made me think of that. They're bringing more creators from Angel who are going to come onto the staff for next season for Grimm.
And
I forgot who they are. But anyway, so wrapping that up, next up we want to talk about Supernatural.
Felicia Day!
Yay.
And she's alive again.
Yay. Yeah. Yep. And then she makes it out. I was talking about with my fear that she would die twice in one week, and my heart couldn't take that.
Well, she did. She did really well. It was so great. Like the geek speak that they did in this episode.
She was fantastic, and it was like knowledgeable geek speak. Like this is right. This is like stuff people write this because they know about it.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't seem forced, like they were trying too hard to be hip and clever with the geek. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the fact that even Dean, who claims he doesn't know anything geek, his response was like, man, it's at the Death Star. And I was like, really? Star Wars reference? And they all knew what he was talking about.
But Dean does that all the time. He always throws out just like a random
pop. He has enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the Comic-Con reference.
Right!
Can end with the line, I was drunk, it was Comic-Con.
But I love his comeback, we've all been there.
And Dean talking her through flirting with the guy was hilarious.
Yeah.
That was so good.
I just love he's like, this never happened. Even more than that, we finally get what Dick Roman's endgame is.
Well, yes.
Which we all sort of saw coming.
Right.
Yeah, but except...
the scope that we did.
Yeah, but we don't know what the big chunk of clay is for.
True, but... Considering that, we have three episodes left, it's about time we got back to this big Leviathan plot line.
Right. That's
been my big complaint.
Because now the Leviathan plot is really interesting. It's like, okay, what do we do beyond... the God versus Satan, heaven versus hell apocalypse. Let's do creatures from another dimension enslaving humanity.
Soylent Green is people.
Yeah.
He's like, we are the Soylent Green.
Yeah.
They're not from another dimension per se. They're just old creatures from
From here.
Yeah.
Antediluvian times.
Yeah. So the episode was all really good. I liked the arguments that they had, and
the pacing was really good.
The pacing was great.
And the continuing thread about Bobby initially
becoming a vengeful spirit. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, half of it, they're making Bobby vengeful.
I know.
Like, Bobby needs to feel like he has a purpose. And his purpose is protecting the boys. And he's fine when he thinks he's protecting the boys. When they resist that, then he gets angry.
Mm-hmm.
And him getting angry is not good.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, guys, just need to give him purpose.
It feels like Dean is the one who's really resisting this, and I can't for the life of me figure out why.
Well, because he's already mourned him. And he feels like you can't mourn someone who's there. You can't move on. You can't do... And Bobby's death really affected him more than anybody else.
It did.
And so... And it's messing him up that Bobby is still there.
It is. I think it's that, totally, because you can sense that, definitely.
Yeah.
But I think it still comes back to what they talked about before, which is that they know what happens. They do know what traditionally happens to someone in this situation, the angry spirit crossing that line and not being able to come back. And they loved Bobby. He was like their second dad. So of course they don't want to see that happen. So they don't want to take advantage of him right now, knowing that that would ultimately be maybe what happens if they did.
Right. And I think they understand putting Bobby in the same room with the man who killed him is like the fast track to vengeful spirit level.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, it is.
But at the same time, I feel like Sam is starting to see the pragmatic opportunity that they have here with Bobby, but he's not sure how to explain that to Dean.
Yeah, Dean's not going to see anything logically about that. But also, preview for next week. Looks like Castiel is back. Woohoo! I'm almost feeling that almost anything is better than what we had the last time Castiel came back, because I was really disappointed, mainly because...
He wasn't really Castiel.
Well, yeah, most of it he wasn't. And when he was, at the very end...
Too short.
It was too short, and he needs to have a conversation with Dean. Him and Dean need to sit and talk.
Work stuff out, man.
Yeah. So I was really disappointed by that. So hopefully... this week or next week, we'll actually get that conversation. I feel like they're moving towards Castiel being killed, which is, I'm not saying I'm fine with that, but as long as he gets straight with Dean first, I think I'll be okay.
Well, that's the thing about this show.
Considering that we went most of the season thinking Castiel was already dead,
right?
Killing him off for real isn't going to be that hard.
Because I know it's like absence makes the heart grow fonder or something. Maybe not for this, because exactly, he's been gone for so long that I personally don't trust that he's going to stay around for much longer, even though he's back, you know?
Yeah, yep. I love Castiel.
Me too. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think he was a great dynamic for the show. Absolutely. And which is why I thought this whole season was kind of weird, because there were so many times where they just didn't have that other person in their corner, and it was just the two of them, which I think they needed, because they've always had this kind of this backup that they've always relied on. But it was kind of a lonely season, if you will.
Yeah. But it really hasn't been just the two of them since season one or two.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't like it personally. I don't like it at all. I think the weakest Supernatural has ever been is when it's just the two brothers.
I love it.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, you need somebody like a Castiel or a Bobby in there.
Yeah.
Yep.
To referee when they're being idiots, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to give that other perspective, because both of them have died and gone to hell and heaven and everywhere in between, and it's like you need something to ground them almost.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right.
But, I mean, like you were saying with the dynamic that they have with Castiel, I sort of feel like after this season, everything that's happened, they can never go back to that dynamic. They can never have that relationship again. Well, so I think like what Libya is saying, like if Dean and Castiel can just have it out and get right with each other and then Castiel moves on, I think that's the perfect way to do it.
Right. I agree. They can't be best friends anymore.
No, the innocence is gone. Yeah.
Except the thing that actually frustrates me is Castiel didn't do anything worse than Sam did. So what Sam did to Dean was the same.
Yeah.
And they're cool with each other.
Well, I guess because they realize that they're human. You know, it's that human frailty thing. Whereas they, especially Dean, expected a lot more from a, quote, angel, you know. So.
Castiel is an angel. He's supposed to be an enlightened being, which, you know, if anything we've established in this show is that the angels are not enlightened.
Except that the whole reason that Castiel made the mistake he made is because Dean made Castiel more human. Like, he made a human mistake because of Dean. So I kind of, like... To me, I feel like if you could forgive Sam, you can forgive Castiel. That's all. They literally made the exact same mistake, which is they made a deal with a demon and betrayed Dean. Both of them did the same thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they both almost destroyed the entire world. And then they're both sorry about it. And I'm like, if he forgave Sam, he should be able to forgive Castiel. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think they've had that opportunity yet for them to hash it out.
That's true.
Right.
All
right.
Let's move on.
Yep.
Next up, we're going to talk about Grimm, and I'll let Susie talk first because this is her show.
Loved it. Yeah, this one, I was really, really happy with this one. I know we're getting close to the season end as well on this show, but when we realized that, okay, We've been talking about the past and how is his Grimm life going to parlay into his personal life, specifically with Juliet. In this episode, it was awesome because we had Monroe coming to dinner, which was so, so funny. it was brilliant.
It was the
you
most
knew, too,
awkward.
That he was going to be the perfect guest anyway, because he would bring the perfect wine to match with the dinner. And, you know, he would just be what he was. But the whole idea of them needing to kind of get their story straight about how they explained to Juliet how they met and the fact that, of course, it went wrong, it had to, was just classic. And I was kind of giggling through the whole thing. And yet, with that kind of levity from the episode, you had on the other side this really, really killer plot where basically two Reapers, and I love that. I'm like, Grim Reaper, I get it. Ha-ha. You know, these two Reapers with their skies.
Yeah.
You know, are called upon to come from overseas and take out Nick. And the fact that Nick really is just now, as we saw in the opening parts of the episode, trying to really level up his Grimm skills as much as he can.
Like he's a character. I like that.
Level up his skills. I know. Like, it was great. He tried to get that in there and, you know, kind of maybe buffy it up a little. But then you get that whole sequence at the end where he's doing his best, you know, to help the Beaver clan, you know, the Beaver people, ice Beavers that they call them. And by doing that, I think kind of he finds his own power, like whether or not it's literal or just, you know, psychological for him, that he's willing to defend them and is taking on these two Reapers, gets them both essentially, and classic Grimm sends the message back to Home Office and says, you know what, you're messing with the Grimm. Because up until now, you know, being a proponent of the show, I never really had this feeling that he was a Grimm with a capital G. You know, he always felt like he was a great cop, good detective, and he put the force where he needed to, you know, as he was coming across the different, you know, creatures during the course of the series. But this really showed that he's leveled up. You know, he's really at that point now where he can take on whatever's thrown at him.
Well, the thing is when I saw that scene with him fighting the two Reapers, I was like, is this like a Buffy thing? Like, I really felt like all of a sudden his powers just got turned on. You know?
Like the jumping around, the quick moves. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. He couldn't fight this well like last week. Like, what? But I kind of feel like maybe it's the adrenaline and it's literally the thing. Because when people talk about Grimms, they make them seem so freaking scary.
Right.
So I was like, I don't think they're talking about you, man, because you're really not that scary. But if it's actually a power.
And I think it could be. I think, and I'm hoping that that's what they do show us, because it would make sense. Because everything they have told us up to now about the kind of the legacy of the Grimm, it doesn't, from what I can tell anyway, I may have been misinterpreting it wrong, but it seems like they're not all necessarily related to each other, you know, maybe through some distant bloodline.
Yeah, they are related. They're definitely related because he didn't get his Grimm powers, didn't get passed to him until his aunt died. Like,
that's true. And maybe that's what it is, and that's the trigger for it. So I think it's just these bloodlines, you know, that have gone through, you know, down the centuries. But it almost feels like if that's the case, then there has to be something more than just, oh, by the way, your job is to kill monsters and you can see them. It's like there has to be kind of a buffiness to it.
I think part of it is he also always fought with a gun. And now he's actually fighting with grim weapons. And it's just like, boom, it just kind of kicked in. I think that's what they're going for. And I think
and you're right, too, actually. You make a good point, because in the beginning, even Monroe was really impressed that he was picking everything up so easily. My first thought was, oh, he's just a very, you know, athletic or physical guy. But that might have been playing into your point that it's just innate and he doesn't know it.
Right.
And I think something that could play into it is the fact that he's told a lot of the creatures he's encountered, as long as you're not doing anything you're not supposed to be doing, I'm not going after you.
Right.
If you break the law, if you're threatening people, I will take you down. And with the episode's title was called Leave It to Beavers. And the fact that the refrigerator, the repair guy,
right,
had come to trust him and was trying to get others to, and they didn't want to, but he's going to have to. Juliet is not completely stupid, and she's right. Obviously knowing something's going on. Best line, by the way. I want that recipe now before I forget.
Because that wasn't subtle at all.
But as I changed the subject,
and
right.
I think with the Nick, not Nick, his partner
Monroe,
Hank?
No,
his
Hank.
With Hank, something needs to give on that front, because he's not going to be able to keep this secret completely. There's just too many variables, too many opportunities to get caught.
Yeah, well, but you're right, though, because Monroe mentioned that, too. He's like, dude, how are you going to explain all these other extra weapons to Hank, you know?
Yeah, because he's going to have, now that he knows he can use those really well, he's going to have to bring them along with him everywhere he goes. So, yeah, I don't know. But thumbs up, man. Have to say, this is one of the better episodes. I'm actually, Grimm was one of those shows I was really kind of skeptical on, like on the fence.
It took them a while to find their way.
Yeah, I really feel like now the show's pretty good. I like it now.
How awesome was that when Monroe suggests, you know, if you want to send a message, two heads are better than one.
That was awesome. And then the note,
next time, send your best.
Yes. Obviously, these guys are lame.
So, yeah, thumbs up, definitely.
Yeah. Next up, let's talk In Plain Sight. And who else has seen it? Is it just me?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I don't watch it.
Silence is when the whale swallowed Jonah. All right. Basically, this episode is the penultimate. We only have one episode left. But it wraps up the whole storyline with the dad, which... Stephen Lang knocked it out of the park playing the father. And it ended pretty much how I thought. Only thing is, man, that FBI agent guy that keeps saying that Mary is helping her father.
Brother.
Yeah, I know. I looked it up and I was like, who is this other McCormick that's on the cast? And I was like, holy crap, it's the jerk. And they look nothing alike. But man, he is such a jerk. You hate him so much. But basically, he's covering his incompetence by blaming her for everything, and I just really didn't like that.
He needs a Joffrey slap.
Only thing... That's true. And so the whole episode was them tracking down her dad, and her dad being one step ahead. And then when she actually tries to help them, because she figures out where her dad's going, and then they don't listen to her, and then she shows up and captures her dad, and they're like, you must have been helping him. She's like, no, I called you on the phone and told you he would be right here, and then you didn't listen to me, so I showed up and captured him for you. He's in handcuffs. So anyway, that guy was a jerk, but it was really sad, like her whole, like as much as she claimed she didn't care about her dad, like when he actually does, like, bite the big one, which
oh,
is,
him off?
Well, you knew that was going to happen.
It was coming.
It was coming, because one, they said he had cancer, so he was dying anyway, and he had an opportunity to save Mary, and he took it. And he died for it. And so as much as she was pretending the whole episode that she was fine, she didn't care about him, she didn't feel any emotion for him, when she actually finds out that he's dead, you know, she loses it. And also Marshall has totally screwed himself, because in the middle of a dinner party with his fiance, it was like, actually, was it their actual engagement party? Like, it was a really big party the two of them were having. And Mary calls, and he left the party and just, he ran to the other woman.
Good.
And it was just like, and it was so weird because this is an awkward moment where he runs out to Mary and everyone in the room knows he's running because they're all other people that work with Mary too. Mary didn't call any of them. They're all her friends too. She only called Marshall, and everybody else is looking at the fiance like, sorry.
So do you think they'll get them together in the finale?
Well, the preview for next week is Marshall talking to Mary, and he tells her, he's like, all this stuff, and he goes, and I love you, and I went, I was like, you put that in the preview? I was like, holy crap!
I want you to watch.
You see it coming, come on.
Yeah, I knew it was coming, but then, of course, they don't show any reaction from her, so we don't know what her reaction to that is.
Okay.
But it's the last episode, so I don't know, man. Yeah. I kind of feel like Marshall can do better than Mary sometimes. And I always feel like Mary really can't do better than Marshall. But he definitely, if he's talking about he loves Mary, he definitely shouldn't marry the chick that he's engaged to right now.
Right.
Like, his heart is not in it.
And maybe Mary's not, quote, good enough for him, but I think she's right for him.
That's true, but I don't know if Mary knows that.
Well, we'll find out.
Oh! That's one of those things. It's like, you only have one episode left. Don't screw this up.
Yep.
Like, I'm really tense about this. This is weird, but I'm really tense about that. Oh, all right. Next up, let's talk about Fringe.
Really poignant episode, actually, I thought.
Yeah.
I really feel like, is this it? This is really feel like everything is coming to a close.
Boy. It is weird, especially since we know that it's coming back next season. But I think in this one, it was, I didn't think it would bother me. I'm sitting here watching it, you know, very, you know, plain face, like no reaction or anything. But honestly, when Olivia and Olivia had their little discussion about the rainbows, I like actually kind of got sad and almost cried. It was It was touching. I mean, I was surprised that that just kind of came out of nowhere. But then I realized that I have actually grown fond of all of the folks from the other universe as well, and I didn't really realize it, I guess.
Yeah, I really, oh man, and then the Walter
That's what I liked about this episode, was just how they really sort of hit home this developing relationship between these people who were really like evil enemies for a long time.
Because they were so misunderstood, we find out, you know? It's that whole misconception.
Well, I think the whole one of the purposes of the Orangeverse was to kind of show you that just because it's our universe and their universe that they have more in common, that they're not the enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's too easy
to put them in black and white like that.
To label the other as bad.
But I also like the Walter universe. Walter,
that was so great.
Yeah. I was Misty again. It was good. It was a good conversation.
And you know what I thought was very interesting too? There was this one moment that as I was watching it, I thought, God, that was really cool. And I know they did it on purpose. But when what was it now? I think Peter was working on something. I forget now what it was, but he was sitting at his desk working on something. And Lincoln was kind of leaning over his desk watching him. And when they cut the shot to Lincoln's point of view, to his face, his reaction, they had a reflection of him in the screen, the computer monitor screen or whatever that was dark. So you kind of saw two Lincolns. And I thought that was really kind of neat because we know obviously that the other Lincoln from the other universe died. But right, it was still kind of representing the fact that he could go either way, 50-50. And we find out at the end, of course, that he opted for the other side.
I think we all knew that he was going to go for the other side.
Yeah, we did. Susie, 1 second.
While you were talking, Susie, I knew exactly the moment. I'm looking at that shot saying, wow, that's nice.
Oh, awesome.
Where
good.
They're talking
it wasn't
about
just
parallels
okay,
and you
cool.
see the face in the yep. reflection. I thought it was a poignant episode. I was really afraid that either something wasn't going to happen right when they cut the connection, or that Peter would disappear.
Right.
I loved like how you had like Walter's sort of panicked, oh my God, did it actually happen? Look for like a second, and then you cut to Peter, and you're like, oh, okay, fine, we're all right.
Yeah, and it was really good. He walks up to Peter and just kind of, he just needed to be near him. You
exactly.
know? That was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That all the family bits about the show really I find moving. You know, everything about that is good.
And I also really liked the whole story with the David Robert Jones and what his whole end game is.
Right. Well, his end game is still kind of crazy. Like, who decides to destroy two worlds to populate it with your whole arc of the Covenant thing, and you get your freakish animals. Like, who decides that's a good idea? Only crazy people.
Well, you know, it, like, you're crazy, and you figure this stuff out, and by God, he did.
Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm not on board with that. I still think he's just a nutbag. But why do we have to call him David Robert Jones? Can we just call him David Jones? We know who the heck we're talking about.
Our Davy Jones Locker.
I mean, it's just like, every time they talk about him, they have to put his middle name in there. And I'm like, we know who you're talking about. It's taking too long to say that. That's all.
Just... Well, sometimes they just call him Jones.
They do just call him Jones, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, this week's episode, it didn't feel like that, but...
No, not really.
It was good. I like the Astrid saying goodbye to each other. I'm going to really miss the other Astrid a lot.
I tell you, like, all the poignant moments between everybody, the one that got me the most was the Astrids waving goodbye to each other.
They didn't even say anything. Yeah, it's just a little wave. Oh, okay, you're making me sad now just thinking about it.
So, of course, the teaser for the two-part season finale is that he doesn't need... to have the bridge device to do...
Well, he's doing an alternate. He could have done it that way.
He's got a backup plan.
Yeah, so he's got a backup plan, whatever that is.
Don't!
But I think the backup plan involves...
When you're as evil as Jones, you don't rely on somebody else's device to enable your evil plans.
I think that the alternate plan involves Olivia because she can go between universes on her own.
Yeah.
I think he needs Olivia to do his alternate plan.
Have we seen her do that in the Orangeverse?
No.
No, but she did destroy all the power in an entire building with her mind.
This is true.
So she's got the power. She just hasn't used... Well, now she has her memory back from being the other...
Right.
So she knows how to do it.
I'd be interested to know what they're going to do with season 5.
The last 13?
Yeah.
I predict it's going to be Fight the Future. I think they're going to defeat Davy Jones. Jones.
Yeah. That's why. I think
they're going to defeat him.
We had that awesome episode last week that just sort of came out of nowhere.
But it was great.
What is this? This is awesome.
Right, but I figure that in the finale, they're going to defeat Jones. And so then the 13 episodes is they have to defeat the Observers, Fight the Future.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Which I'm totally cool with. I would love to see that battle.
I think that's gonna be great. So yay, thumbs up for Fringe. And it's renewed
way up in the heavens for Fringe.
Alright, so that's it for us this week. If you have any feedback, send it to cbcampfire@gmail.com. follow us on Twitter, we're on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com and Krypton Radio, stitcher.com, and Weedonopolis. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye. Bye.